Welcome to the 293rd episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, a look back at the start of the college football playoff and bowl games, a look back at week 16 action in the NFL, and we'll do our weekly look back at basketball action with college basketball and college basketball key games and a review of the NBA. Let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website and social media with those handles 4th and 24. Starting in the NFL, Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. In the NBA, Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. In college football playoff predictions specifically, Patrick went 4-0. And in college basketball, Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. That brings his total for the week to 12-4 and his overall total to 1,231.769. That's an overall winning percentage of 61.6%. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, obviously, I thought I had a good week based on just how those results went. I think that's pretty evident. In the NBA, I picked all Thursday night games on TNT with the most relevant injury information, excuse me, for that, obviously. It makes it much easier to pick. Only went 2-2 in those. The Knicks beat the Timberwolves in the what will now be the Julius Randle Cat Bowl from now on, basically. The Clippers beat the Mavericks 118-95 on the road. I got those two wrong. Mavs have been playing, I think they have the best record in the last month or so, give or take, like since November 16th or 18th, something like that. So, surprised they lost that game. But not as surprised that the Timberwolves lost. They've kind of been up and down all year long. And, you know, playing basically 500 basketball all year. The Thunder, though, beat the Magic 105-99. Magic very shorthanded, but they're still playing pretty good basketball. The Grizzlies beat the Warriors 144-93, which was just not a close game at all, even though it should have been. And then moving on, I guess I'll stay with basketball, move to college basketball. I went 3-1 in those predictions. Cincinnati beat Dayton 66-59, Cincinnati ranked 19th, Dayton ranked 22nd heading into that game. Nice neutral court game there in Ohio between the two Ohio-based teams. Number 2 Auburn beat number 16 Purdue 87-69. They continue their dominance. Talk about that later. North Carolina beat number 18 UCLA 76-74 at the CBS Sports Classic. Those are the three games I got right. And then Mississippi State went on the road and beat number 21 Memphis 79-66. That game I got wrong. And then moving on to football, I think we all know what happened in all the playoff games, but I will just say I did pick Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, and Notre Dame, so I got all of them right, and we'll talk more in depth about those games in a second, so I won't even go over the scores, but 4-0 there. And then in the NFL, the Chargers beat the Broncos 34-27 on Thursday Night Football, so I got that Chargers prediction correctly. The Chiefs beat the Texans 27-19, so I got that one correct. The Ravens beat the Steelers 34-17, those last two games actually on Saturday, which I got correct as well. And then the one game that I picked on Sunday, I got wrong. The Commanders beat the Eagles 36-33, obviously. The Commanders benefiting from Jalen Hurts leaving that game in the middle there. So not exactly the conditions I picked the game under, but at the same time, still happy with the overall record this week.
Okay, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our social media on Thursday. Let's now turn our attention to college football with a look back at the first bowl games and the first round of the first ever 12-team college football playoff.
Well, we'll start with the playoff games, like I said, so that we can kind of get that out of the way, get the discussion out of the way. I think the main takeaway from the weekend was that no conference deserved a bid in the college football playoff because every conference got destroyed. The only conference that didn't have a bad week was the Independents because Notre Dame won pretty easily. But look, obviously, starting with Notre Dame, they beat Indiana 27-17. That game was basically over by the end of the third quarter when Notre Dame led 20-3, and yet somehow that was the most entertaining game of the weekend, or well, closest game of the weekend, not the most entertaining. The most entertaining game of the weekend, I'll actually move on to that one very quickly, was number 5 Texas against number 12 Clemson. Closest game throughout, started 7-7 in the first quarter. Texas did take over in the second quarter. They made it 28-10 at the half, but Clemson was able to strike back in the rest of the game. They brought it to within, I think, 7 points at some point. If not, they at least kept it within that 14-point margin and had some opportunities, had a fourth down that they couldn't convert in the red zone as well in goal-to-go scenario, actually, now that I think about it, to make it a 7-point game. They just couldn't quite trim it down at the end. Texas had two big runs in that game that really powered their victory. But I would like to say that I'd like to give myself credit because I said if there was going to be an upset, even though I didn't pick any, it would be in that game. And that was really the only game I think we can both agree that looked anywhere near competitive. So
correct.
I think I'm happy with that one. The game that you thought might be an upset was actually by far the biggest blowout. Penn State just destroyed SMU. 28-0 in the first half was the lead. SMU scored in the third quarter and in the fourth quarter to make it close 38-10. But in the end, by margin of victory, this was the least close game. It's actually interesting because it didn't really feel like it. SMU had an opportunity, basically dropped a touchdown on their first possession of the game. And also if Kevin Jennings had run for it on that RPO play, they would have gotten a first down and they were at the 20-yard line. So could have been a lot closer than it was, and that would have shifted the momentum. And also, what, three pick sixes or two pick sixes? But, you know, well, but I don't know why you're saying come on. I mean, two pick sixes, it is what it is. They threw two pick sixes. They had no chance to score because anytime they got near the red zone, they'd throw a pick.
Correct. But a game where you throw two pick sixes and it's a 28-point game, now you see why I thought it could be competitive. I didn't predict a guy would throw two pick sixes.
Well, Michigan threw two pick sixes in a playoff game a few years ago and almost came back and won that game. So it's not impossible. It's not impossible. Yeah, definitely a talent disparity gap. And that's why I'm saying that this game really wasn't that close, because Penn State was clearly the better team on the field in this game. And so was Ohio State in their win over Tennessee. Which kind of destroyed all the arguments about the three-loss SEC teams that everybody kept making because, well, if a 10-2 SEC team looks this bad, I don't want to see what the 9-3 SEC teams look like at all. Ohio State won this game 42-17. They were up 21-0 after the first quarter. Tennessee got some momentum back in this game. They made it 21-10 at the half. They clearly showed some better signs on offense, got lucky with a few stops on defense, but they still did get those stops. And it looked like they kind of trend their way back into the game. And then they just didn't do anything in the third quarter. It was back to the first quarter result again. Ohio State shutting Tennessee out, ended up with a 35-10 lead heading into the fourth quarter. And, of course, the game ended 42-17, even though it at one point was 42-10. This basically looked exactly like the Ohio State-Indiana game in the regular season. So I'm very confident that those two teams were on the exact same level by the end of the year because same venue, same team, pretty much the exact same result. I think Ohio State won that game like 33-18, so I think technically this game is even closer, but Indiana also scored a garbage time touchdown in that game, so, or maybe it was 38-13, so, you know, I think it was pretty much the same margin is kind of the point, and I think that those two teams are pretty much even. I don't think you can fault SMU for making it to their conference championship game, despite the fact that their schedule obviously wasn't too tough, but, you know, it is what it is. I think this is kind of what people should have expected in a 12-team playoff, especially because I've been seeing the stats thrown around that basically I think the 4-team playoff margin in the semifinals games are pretty much was the same as the average margin of victory in these games. So the only difference is just that the seeding disparity is larger, which in theory should create games like this, and that's exactly what it did.
And home field advantage.
And also not only the home field advantage part, but also, because of the way that they did seeding this year, you actually have two of the teams that would have been in a 4-team playoff, most likely. Actually, no, not most likely. They would have been in.
Correct.
Who instead are now playing as 6, 7, 5, and 8 seeds. I don't even know. I mean, honestly, I'm not going to re-litigate what would have been the 4-team playoff had there been a 4-team playoff. You could make the argument for Notre Dame. You could make the argument for Penn State. You could make the argument that the Big Ten Championship was a play-in game, and Penn State would have made it if they had won, and then Oregon would have missed it if they had lost. But, you know, it's hard. I mean, the Ohio State this year literally had the exact same season that they did 2 years ago when they missed the Big Ten championship game but actually made the playoffs through the back door because the other conference champions weren't quite as strong. That's exactly how they made it 2 years ago when they lost on Georgia to that field goal. So there's an argument that they could have been in it. At the same time, there's an argument that Texas would have been in it because Georgia might not have been in it in another scenario. And you could go back and forth on this forever, but the point is, these four teams that were hosting these games were not supposed to be hosting these games, and they also are better than two of the teams hosting, those two teams being Boise State and Arizona State. I would at least say that all four of them are better than Arizona State. I won't go as far as saying that all four of these teams are automatically better than Boise State. I think they probably are, but I think it's at least an argument that can be made between Boise State and Penn State just because they have a common opponent in Oregon and they pretty much play them the exact same. But other than that, I mean, Ohio State, Texas, and Notre Dame are all a lot better than Arizona State, and I think that's kind of obvious. And I also think the same thing is true with Boise State, although Ohio State could have proven that with the results on the field, and so could have Texas, and so could have Notre Dame, and none of them did. And that's their problem, and that's what they have to deal with, and that's what the teams who missed it have to deal with, unfortunately. Although I think Lane Kiffin has gone silent on Twitter since Tennessee got blown out, so I don't know what to say about that. I do know what to say about that. I really don't like that other teams' coaches are parading other teams in their conferences. You should be focused on beating those teams, not propping them up when other teams in other conferences lose in games that have nothing to do with your team because of the fact that you could not get your team to beat Kentucky. That is why you missed the playoffs, because you lost to Kentucky. That is something that nobody, barely anybody else did in the country. That's why Ole Miss missed it. Alabama missed it because they lost to Oklahoma. We could go on and on. Frankly, Tennessee lost to Arkansas. That's by far the worst loss of any team in the playoff. Even though people want to talk about Ohio State's loss to Michigan, losing to a 6-6 Arkansas team is a lot worse than losing in a rivalry game to the defending national champions, regardless of their record. So I could go on and on about the playoff. But at the same time, I actually do think they got the right 12 teams in. I think if they wanted to make the four most exciting games in the first round, then sure, they could have put teams that technically have higher upside in there, but that's not what it's about. It's about what happened in the first 12 games. And I think the only argument that you could have made that could have been resume-based and talent-based would be Miami, to be quite honest, because they only had two losses. None of their losses were bad losses. And they also had some good wins along the way, and they're pretty entertaining to watch. But moving on to the actual bowl games, started with Florida beating Tulane 33-8. Speaking of that, Miami, that's one of the teams that Miami got a win over earlier in the year. Florida ends the year with a really, really positive end to the season. Honestly, they won, I think, three or four games in a row at the end. I think it was four at the end of the year. Tulane obviously not playing with Nathan Mensah, who transferred because everybody transfers at this point. He transferred to Duke, so Tulane without their starting quarterback in a bowl game. The rare example of the power conference team having fewer opt-outs than the non-power conference team. And that obviously skewed heavily in Florida's favor as they came away with this easy victory. Ohio beat Jacksonville State 30-27. Jacksonville State's coach has left through the coaching carousel, that being Rich Rodriguez, of course, leaving Jacksonville State to go back to West Virginia. So Ohio was playing a coachless team. They get their 11th win in program history for the first time ever. And speaking of West Virginia, they were without their own coach because Rich Rod did not have time to go in there and figure out the system and coach the bowl game. So number 25 Memphis got that victory over West Virginia. The Tigers end the season strong. They get to their 11th win of the season. Speaking of 11th wins, UNLV, number 24 in the country, also got to their 11th win, although they were without a coach, so they actually did win without their coach coaching in the bowl game. But they won in that bowl game because California, Cal, did not have their quarterback, because their quarterback is transferring. So if you can see the common theme developing here, basically every bowl game had a coach or a quarterback or both missing, depending on what team you're talking about. Maybe the only game that didn't was James Madison against Western Kentucky. James Madison won that game 27-17. Western Kentucky, a team that for some reason always plays really well in bowl games. I guess it's hard to stop an air raid offense when you don't face one all year long. And a lot of teams struggle with that. They don't have the athletes to really keep up, the depth to keep up by the end of the season. JMU did not struggle with that. Their defense gave up some points in the first half. They were down 14-7 at the half, but then they bounced back strong, had a 17-14 lead heading into the fourth quarter, and only gave up three total points in the second half to get that 27-17 victory. And then Sam Houston beat Georgia Southern 31-26 to get to 10 wins on the season, proving once again, by the way, Sam Houston, James Madison, Jacksonville State would like to point out 10 wins, 9 wins, and 9 wins. All three of those programs were in the FCS 4 years ago. So if you don't think that a North Dakota State could come up and immediately compete, and you know, maybe even help rebuild a conference like the Pac-12 by playing good football, you're just wrong. I mean, these are very, very quality teams that just aren't in D1 or in FBS for football for different reasons, not on the field talent whatsoever. But speaking of on the field talent, UTSA, one of the more disappointing regular seasons out there. They were definitely one of the teams that was thought of as maybe a dark horse to even make the playoff, but ended up going 6-6 this season, came on strong at the end of the year, won some big games, scored a lot of points all year long, and that was true again against Coastal Carolina. They won 44-15. Coastal scored all of their 15 points in the fourth quarter when the game was basically over. Kind of sad because this was in the Myrtle Beach Bowl, so this was actually a home game for the Chanticleers, but they did not play well on their home field. UTSA just ran them out of their own building. And then finally, I think what's been the best bowl game so far, I would argue, probably most fun to watch for sure, maybe between this one and Memphis and West Virginia, probably the two contenders, Northern Illinois beat Fresno State 28-20 in double overtime. Northern Illinois running double passes on like five straight plays at the end of that game to secure the victory, get the two-point conversion, and then stopped Fresno State a play later after Fresno State's kicker missed three different field goals that would have meant that the game would have ended in regulation.
I was going to say, an exciting game. If you'd like missed field goals, send a game to overtime. But overtime was very exciting. All right, let's move on from college football and turn our attention to the NFL with a review of Week 16 action.
Starting with that Thursday night game that we talked about earlier, the Chargers beat the Broncos. Both of those teams now 9-6. They're both very important for the playoff picture because they are the sole, whoever loses out of them could let in another team, maybe the Bengals or the Colts or the Dolphins through the back door to the playoffs. But currently, it's the Chargers who are in. They're pretty much clinched. I mean, they're not officially clinched, but they should make it pretty easily. But they won 34-27. Hassan Haskins scoring the final touchdown of the game to secure the victory for the Chargers on what was a pretty exciting game on Thursday night. The Chiefs beat the Texans 27-19 on Saturday. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes playing with a high ankle sprain, according to the reports, but did look pretty good, honestly, running around a lot, ran in on a 20-yard scramble or so, 20 yards or so, on his first touchdown of the game, and definitely, you know, the Chiefs just doing their thing where they keep the games close. They can't blow out anybody, but at the same time, they always win. They're 14-1 now. They have clinched, I believe, actually, they have not clinched the one seed yet. Technically, they could lose out, and the Bills could steal that from them, but they will probably get the one seed based on the way they've been playing this season. The Ravens, though, did get a big win on Saturday, beating the Steelers 34-17. They still are behind the Steelers in the standings because of conference win percentage as the tiebreaker. They both have the exact same divisional record, and they are 1-1 in the season series. But the Steelers win out on that tiebreaker, like I said. But both teams at 10-5, Baltimore sitting at the 5 seed, Pittsburgh sitting at the 3 seed. I think Baltimore would be fine if they were honestly playing either the Texans or the Chargers or the Broncos. I really don't think it matters who they play. But at the same time, it would be nice to have home field advantage just in case maybe the Texans pull off an upset and all of a sudden they could be hosting a later playoff game. That would be a scenario where it would be pretty important to have that home field advantage. So definitely the Ravens will be striving for that later in the season. In the rest of the AFC, action wasn't really too notable, although the Bills played a close one with the Patriots, only winning 24-21. Would have been a big deal if they kind of choked home field there. But speaking of those two games, the MVP race should be down to Lamar Jackson, Saquon Barkley, and Josh Allen. But despite the fact that Josh Allen has done a lot of things that, you know, players haven't done in a while, Lamar has had the better season. He has more touchdowns, he has fewer turnovers, he has more yards. His team might not be better, but Josh Allen just had a pretty bad game against a pretty bad team. And I don't think that this race is as over as people think it is. And I also don't understand why Saquon Barkley isn't getting more discussion anymore in this, because I really do feel like he should be still in the conversation. I guess it's because his 255-yard game against the Rams came the week before. Josh Allen scored 6 touchdowns against the Rams, but, you know, the Bills still lost that game, so take that how you will. I think those three are definitely the main contenders, though. And right now, not my money, because I actually don't think it's a good bet based on how voters have voted in the past. But my pick, if I had a vote, would be Lamar Jackson of the Ravens. And I'd honestly probably put Saquon second. But I'd have to kind of dive into that a little bit more. But I would definitely pick Lamar first. But anyway, moving on from that discussion, talking about the NFC now. Speaking of Saquon Barkley and the Eagles, they lost to the Commanders 36-33. Obviously, the Jalen Hurts injury, the concussion, is the big story here. But at the same time, that's a game that the Eagles should have won. They gave up 22 points in the fourth quarter. They were up 27-14 heading into the fourth. They should have been able to close that out on the defensive end. Devontae Smith also dropped a wide-open catch that would have sealed the game, getting a first down on the third down, and he didn't. So the Commanders got an opportunity to get the ball back. Not necessarily, well, technically still in desperation mode, but definitely not in as dire of a situation as they could have been. So that was a little bit of a choke by the Eagles there. They definitely should have won that game. And it's a big deal when you're racing for the one seed and you're up against the Lions and the Vikings, who are both now at 13-2. We're not going to talk about the Lions game, but very important for them because they now do take the lead in that one seed race. And then also they have the head-to-head over Minnesota for now. So that is their advantage. But speaking of Minnesota, they clawed out a victory at Seattle. They won 27-24 against the Seahawks to move to 13-2 on the season. Somehow this team has the third best record in the NFL, but they are the fifth seed in the NFC. That's just kind of a funny thing. You want to talk about playoff seeding in the college football playoff. Talk about that playoff seeding. I feel bad for whoever's the four seed coming out of the South, whether it's the Buccaneers or the Falcons, because I don't think they're winning whatever game that's going to be at home, whether it's the Packers, the Vikings, or the Lions. In that game, it just, there's no chance. I don't think that any of those NFC North teams are going to lose to the whoever comes out of the South there. That division, obviously notoriously not that good. But speaking of that division, the Buccaneers, the reason why the Falcons are now back in the playoff picture, Michael Penix played a pretty good game against the Giants and led them to victory there. Not a tall task, obviously, it's the Giants. But the Cowboys, they beat the Buccaneers 26-24 on Sunday Night Football. That knocked the Bucs out of the playoffs. I said last week I thought the Buccaneers would take care of business and they'd just go 3-0 because their schedule was pretty easy and I didn't think they'd lose to the Cowboys. Well, here we have it. They lost to the Cowboys. Now they do not control their own destiny. If the Falcons go 2-0, then they are in the playoffs instead of the Buccaneers, no matter what the Buccaneers do. However, the Falcons do play the Commanders coming up, so if they lose that game, then the Buccaneers go 2-0, and then all of a sudden, the Bucs are back in it, probably as they should be. Although, frankly, maybe neither of these teams should make the playoffs. I don't know if either of them are actually worthy of it. And speaking of not worthy of the playoffs, the 49ers officially got eliminated this weekend by really a bunch of other results, but also because they lost 29-17 to the Dolphins. Dolphins still do have a chance to make the playoffs, albeit a very, very slim one. Another team that got eliminated from the NFC West was the Cardinals because of the Panthers, who beat the Cardinals 36-30 in overtime. And despite, you know, a rough week in the NFC West overall, the Rams somehow back on top, not even in a tie anymore, actually a game ahead of all the other teams at 9-6 because of their victory over the Jets. Not a smooth victory at all. Tied 6-6 at the half, both teams scored touchdowns, missed extra points, but the Rams do end after being down 6-9 at the half. They scored 13 fourth quarter points, rely on some Jets mistakes, and all of a sudden, Rams with the 19-9 victory are at 9-6, leading the NFC West. But looking at that playoff picture, like I said, the Colts, the Dolphins, and the Bengals are still alive at 8-9-10 in the AFC. They're chasing the Chargers and the Broncos for the final two spots, who are both 9-6. Every other team has clinched: the Chiefs, the Bills, the Steelers, the Texans, and the Ravens. Steelers and Ravens still fighting for that division, while the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Texans have already clinched their divisions. And then in the NFC, of course, the Lions, Eagles, Vikings, and Packers have all clinched playoff spots, while the Rams and Seahawks are still in a fight for their division with a game left against each other at the end of the season. And the Falcons and the Buccaneers still fighting for their division, even though there are no games left between them. And of course, the NFC North Championship and the one seed still up for grabs there between the Lions, Vikings, and Packers, and also the Eagles in the one seed discussion as well.
All right, well, let's shift gears and move to basketball action, starting with the most significant college basketball games of the last week.
Well, unfortunately, it was one of those weeks where stuff wasn't too interesting in the college basketball world. That tends to happen when Big East conference play starts, but not too many teams are that good in the Big East. There were some close games in that conference, but, you know, overall a lack of very, very good games, but some decent ones there. Although there was a pretty good game early on. We'll start with number 7 Florida, who beat North Carolina, 90-84 in the Jumpman Classic. It was the first close game of the week. That was a trend with some of these games, maybe a lot closer than they should have been for a lot of this week. But North Carolina, obviously a surging team. They're able to stay in the game with top-of-the-line teams, just not quite able to get over the hump and actually get a victory over those teams. But at the same time, they have the talent easily to be one of those teams by the end of the year. Just haven't shown it quite yet. Florida still undefeated after that victory. Then you have number 22, Dayton, who beat UNLV 66-65. Not the margin the Flyers should be beating the Rebels by, but a win is a win. I'll get to their more important game later in the week. South Carolina beat number 25, Clemson, 91-88 in overtime. Again, ACC and SEC, you're just seeing the dominance of the SEC. This is the worst team in the SEC by the net rankings, and they just beat arguably what, I mean, maybe up until that point, the second best team in the ACC, arguably third or fourth, depending on who you ask. I would say probably the fourth behind Pitt and North Carolina. But, you know, Clemson's up there in that discussion is the point of that. South Carolina, though, beat them in overtime on their home floor. Palmetto series, of course, very, very important in that state. South Carolina dominating it so far this year. Then you have number 14, Oklahoma, who beat number 24, Michigan, 87-86. Four-point play by Jeremiah Fears to win the game for the Sooners. They are also undefeated. Yes, they're also in the SEC. Don't need to talk any more about that conference, or it'll sound like I'm Paul Feinbaum. But number 11, UConn, beat Xavier 94-89 in overtime. Xavier, a team that hasn't gotten the wins this year, but definitely has the talent to, although Ryan Conwell being out potentially with an injury might be an issue for them, depending on how long he's out for. But UConn, they're getting back on track. They're starting to pile wins up. We all knew that the talent was still there with this team. They're not quite championship level. I really don't think that at all. But at the same time, they still have the talent to at least be, a top 10 team still throughout the year. And then you never know what happens in March anyway. So you never know if they can really put it all together by the end of the year. They have some clear issues that I think Dan Hurley can help them fix, and I think they probably will fix by the end of the year. But for now, they escape with that victory. Number 21, Memphis, beat Virginia 64-62. Memphis stacking up the quad one wins. They've been doing that all year long. I think that was their sixth quad one win, maybe their fifth. Just insane scheduling that they've put together, and it didn't stop there. They played Mississippi State later in the week, and then they play Ole Miss this week. So I'll get to that in a second. But speaking of getting to that in a second, I said I would get to Dayton's other game. They lost to number 19 Cincinnati 66-59. The Bearcats getting a signature win that they needed so far this season. Their best win was against Xavier. That only came last week. And then before that, their only real marquee matchup was against Villanova, who isn't even that great, and they lost that game. So Cincinnati definitely needed to pick up some big wins to kind of back up what the metrics and the preseason expectations said about them, and all of a sudden, now they have two of them. Now you have Auburn, who beat Purdue. I already talked about that. Auburn is just way too dominant. Clearly the best team in the country. Honestly, I'm shocked that the AP voters still have Tennessee number one. I put Tennessee number one personally the week that Auburn lost, just to say, okay, maybe they're vulnerable. I'll see how they respond next week. And ever since then, I didn't need to see another response. I realize now that Duke is just among, and I was not as convinced of Duke as I was. Now I'm completely convinced of Duke as a top 10, probably a top 5 team. And I really think that it took a perfect game to beat Auburn from a top 5 team. That's what Duke got. If Tennessee played Duke on the road, Duke is also winning that game. Auburn is literally one of the most dominant teams I've ever seen. I don't know how they're not ranked number one, but it's going to be funny because they probably will still be ranked number two until Tennessee loses a game, despite the fact that everybody who actually watches games knows that Auburn is the better team. Although it's kind of bad to say everybody who actually watches games, because you'd think that would include AP poll voters, but apparently not. Ohio State then beat number four Kentucky 85-65. A signature win for the Buckeyes. They were struggling without Aaron Bradshaw after he got injured, but now he comes back on the floor against his former team, and he helps them to the victory. It gives Ohio State a signature win. They're now 2-4 against Quad 1. They played a really, really tough schedule, top 15 schedule in the country. So to come out with that 8-4 record, it's not too bad. I mean, they're in kind of the 7-8 seed category, that range. They're in easy striking distance that if they have a strong Big Ten season, if they end near the top, they'll be in a 6 or 7 seed probably pretty comfortably. And even if they have just like a 500 season in conference, I still think they will probably make the tournament. But then you have number 9, Marquette. They beat Xavier 72-70. It's Marquette and UConn at the top of the Big East. And St. John's has looked pretty good as well, I should add. But, you know, Marquette looks like the number one team so far. They've played more challenging games in terms of quantity and in terms of quality, honestly. And they've won more of those games. So I think for now, they're the top dog there. No pun intended, because obviously UConn being the Huskies. But speaking of the actual top dog, the Butler Bulldogs lost to the number 11 UConn Huskies 78-74 later in the week. Butler has shown some signs of being competitive, but not able to pull out some victories. I think they have 6 losses this year. But at the same time, they've been pretty close with some good teams. Number 10, Oregon beat Stanford 76-61 as the Ducks continue to add to their impressive resume. Currently, I would say the favorite to win the Big Ten on talent alone, although there are a few 2-0 teams there since the Big Ten already started that little part of conference play, and Oregon does not have a 2-0 record because they lost to UCLA. So really, I think the favorites in Vegas actually are Michigan and UCLA because they're both 2-0 and have already played two of their tougher games. And UCLA got the win at Oregon and Michigan got the win at Wisconsin. But anyway, Oregon still top in terms of the resumes there. And then speaking of UCLA, they lost to North Carolina over the weekend, like I talked about in predictions. 76-74 North Carolina, finally finishing off one of those games that they go down early, make a run, and then this time, instead of choking in the clutch, they were able to close it out, get that signature victory for them. Good sign heading into ACC play because they will need to close out some tough games. A lot of teams are going to give them their best shot, as is always the case with North Carolina and Duke in the ACC. But especially the case this year where so many teams in that conference, their seasons are honestly kind of already over because there aren't many good teams in that conference, aren't many good wins to get. And a lot of untalented teams that are not going to go near flawless in that conference, regardless of the fact that the talent level is pretty low overall. And then finally, the opposite of the ACC in basketball, the SEC, Mississippi State, claims another win for that conference. They beat number 21 Memphis 79-66 on the road to help the Bulldogs' resume. They only have one loss this year, that loss to Butler. Like I said, Butler does have the ability to beat some good teams at certain points. If Mississippi State hadn't lost that game, they might be in the one seed conversation. I mean, they would be the fourth. They'd be the fourth undefeated SEC team, though. The one seeds can't all be SEC teams, can they? I mean, I guess technically they can be. But Mississippi State could very easily be 12-0. Instead, they're 11-1. But they're still easily a top 15 or 20 team in the country, in my opinion. Actually, not even or top 20. They are a top 15 team in the country. I don't know how they weren't ranked heading in the last week. And Vegas agreed with me. They were favored on the road at number 21 Memphis. And I thought Memphis was even underranked. So both of those teams, I think, definitely inside of the top 20. Mississippi State, definitely a top 15 team, looking very strong heading into SEC play.
All right, let's turn our attention from college basketball and move to the NBA.
We will start very, very briefly because the finals were the night of the last podcast. The Bucks, they won the NBA Cup. They did beat the Thunder. I thought the Thunder were going to win the game. They did not. But as we've seen in past years, you know, that doesn't really mean much. The Lakers, well, in past years, I mean, literally there has only been one NBA Cup. But the Lakers obviously won that last year, didn't really do anything in the playoffs. So doesn't necessarily mean anything. Really just a marker of who's hot at the 25% mark, the quarter mark of the season, which, again, doesn't really count for much. But I guess credit to the Bucks for winning that. Speaking of the Bucks, they are now in fifth in the Eastern Conference standings. I'll get to first place in a second. Now the Cleveland Cavs are that team. They're at 26-4. Again, a ridiculous record by this team. I mean, they're not, I don't think they have the talent to be put in the conversation with, you know, the 2017 Warriors or whatever year that was that they broke the wins record in the regular season. But the fact of the matter is the East isn't that good, and the Cavs honestly have a pretty good chance to get there. I don't know how many games they need to win or how many games above 500 they need to play for the rest of the season. But, and I'm not that great at math, but, you know, 26-4, that looks like it's honestly enough to at least get close to it. They are currently on pace for 71 wins, so it wouldn't take that much of a swing in either direction in win percentage to really give this team the potential to be a record-setting team. At the same time, even though they've won five in a row, they're 9-1 in their last 10, I still think the Celtics are a better team. The Celtics at 22-7 this season, they are obviously still the favorites to win the championship, but, you know, the Cavs definitely, they have what it takes. I think we all know that. I think they can definitely get a lot of credit for that, but you know, the Celtics, they did lose. They lost to the Magic last night in their last game before Christmas Day action. The Magic currently in fourth, just a game behind the Knicks, who are 19-10. The Knicks have won four in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. The Magic, 19-12. Despite dealing with a ton of injuries, they are still staying afloat. I have no idea how they're doing it. I mean, at this point, they've lost Mo Wagner to a torn ACL. They don't have Franz Wagner or Paolo Banchero because of oblique injuries, and they're still above 500. They're still winning games. They played a close game with the Knicks, then a close game with the Thunder, and then they beat the Heat and beat the Celtics. So this is, I mean, this team is, it's honestly remarkable how this team is able to just come out and really put together, no matter what the rotation is, they're able to win games. I know Jason Tatum didn't play against the Magic, but at the same time, they're starting Tristan Da Silva now, who was literally a first-round pick this year. He wasn't really viewed as a guy who would be starting any games this year. And Trey Queen, starting games for Orlando as well. This is not the starting lineup that they're supposed to have. They have guys playing big minutes that really weren't thought of as big parts of the picture heading into the season, and yet it's all working out somehow. Tristan Da Silva has been really good in the last few games, really good overall, honestly, for his rookie season, and they're starting to claw out some victories because of it. And then you have the Bucks, like I said, playing a lot better, 7-3 in their last 10. They will definitely be a playoff team. Those five for sure look like the top five, the teams to beat in the East. And then under it, it's kind of chaotic. You have the Heat, who are 14-13. They're 5-5 in their last 10, which isn't too bad. The Hawks at 6-4 in their last 10 are 15-15. The Pacers have finally started to pick it up. They are 15-15. They've won five in a row after a really, really disappointing start to the season when you consider what the trajectory of a young team who was in the Eastern Conference Finals last year should be. But then you have kind of the less interesting teams in the conference, less interesting stories, the Bulls and the Pistons, both at 13-17, although it is interesting the Pistons are technically in a playoff spot right now given where they were last year, obviously had one of the longest losing streaks of all time, and now all of a sudden they're a competitive team again, which is pretty interesting. Then you have the Nets at 11-18. They are 2-8 in their last 10, trending downwards, and they also traded Dennis Schroeder to the Warriors, so they're shedding talent as well. But the Sixers, they finally pulled it together. They're 7-3 in their last 10, and like I said, it wouldn't take much to get back into playoff contention in the East, and I was right, they're only 1.5 games back after all of that controversy to start the season. Then you have the Hornets at 7-22. They're 1-9 in their last 10, and the Raptors, who have lost 8 in a row at 7-23, and then, of course, the Wizards at 4-23, the worst record in the conference and worst record in the league, despite the fact that Jordan Poole has actually been playing pretty well recently. But in the West, you have the Thunder. They've won 8 in a row. They're 23-5 on the season. The only team that has a better record than them, of course, are the Cleveland Cavaliers. They also extended Alex Caruso, which was an interesting move, the Thunder locking up some of their younger players for a long time. I don't know how much money they have in terms of extending the rest of them, you know, Jalen Williams and those guys, because they have already spent some money on other extensions. But the Thunder getting their core pieces locked in, like I said, 9-1 their last 10, 8 games in a row. The Rockets, 3.5 games back of the Thunder at 20-9. They're 7-3 in their last 10. The Grizzlies are 7-3 in their last 10, 20-10 overall. The Mavericks, 8-2 in their last 10. They're 19-10. They're playing really, really well right now. Climbing up the standings from kind of being mired in mediocrity at the beginning. Then you have the Nuggets at 16-11. They've been very up and down. They're in some close games against teams they shouldn't be close with, but at the same time, they're still the team we know in terms of having a championship core at their heart. And they still have Nikola Jokic, so I'd still take them on any night against any other team, frankly. They'll at least keep every game close with that talent that they have. Then you have the Clippers, who are 17-13. They're 5-5 in their last 10. The Lakers are 16-13. They're also 5-5 in their last 10. 7.5 games back of that first seed, currently in the 7 seed spot. You have the Warriors at 15-13, who are 3-7 in their last 10. They've definitely been struggling. That's why they brought in Schroeder to try to get a little bit of a spark. And then the Spurs, who are the last team above 500 in the West, 15-14. They're 5-5 in their last 10. But the Wolves and the Suns are both at 14-14. They have both lost 3 in a row. But they're tied for the 10th seed. The team that's really getting a lot of flack in the West right now because of the way they've been trending, it's the Sacramento Kings. They've lost 4 in a row now. They're at 13-17, not really staying afloat, and that is not a good sign moving forward considering how good the rest of the teams in this conference are. You have a Spurs team led by Victor Wembanyama and Chris Paul and also Greg Popovich. That team, despite the fact that they're young overall, they have Chris Paul as a vet on the court, and they have Greg Popovich, the best coach of the league, off the court. So it's safe to say that they will have what it takes to stay in the playoff race. And then the other 10 teams that are ahead of the Kings, they have a lot of talent. I mean, you have Anthony Edwards on the Timberwolves. You obviously have the big three of the Suns. I could go on and on. And it just doesn't look like the Kings are going to really be competitive in terms of that mix this season. And then finally, the three teams that are truly uncompetitive, the Blazers at 9-20. The Jazz at 7-21, and the last place Pelicans at 5-25, who have lost 7 in a row. Just a disappointing season for the Pelicans without Zion playing a lot.
All right, well, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, December 31st, where we will once again look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, have another look at college football bowl season, and potentially one or two college football playoff games, depending on when we record this. a look at week 17 in the NFL, and talk about basketball again with another weekly review of both college basketball and the NBA. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted weekly on Wednesdays throughout the season, and his predictions for next weekend's games, as we've mentioned, which will be posted, as always, on Thursday. All of those things on social media and our website. The social media handles are at 4thand24 on Twitter and Instagram. And some of the content is on the website, 4thand24.com. All those handles slash websites are the number 4, THAND, and the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.